Oh.
Hey, Captain.
Hi, I'm just reporting in about the chase. Oh, bye.
Hey, I'm Alan, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben, and you're listening to the Cabal Therapy Podcast.
The Planeswalker of your heart.
The Planeswalker of your heart, Ben. I'm sorry, I didn't introduce you correctly.
It's okay, I took care of it.
Okay then, let's move on to why we're doing this podcast. So, I'll go first, I guess.
Sure.
So, I wanted to do this podcast because I just love playing and talking about Magic. And I talk to you, Ben, about Magic all the time.
Literally all day.
Literally all day. So I just figured...
I don't think we talk about anything else anymore. It's just Magic chat.
It's true. It's cardboard crack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to do a podcast where we talk about Magic because I love it. And kind of... The other thing is, like, I've been, like, on, I'd say, a year ago, I was kind of playing a lot competitively, and I've kind of been, like, on a little hiatus, and I'd like to get back into it a little bit. I figure out the best and most economical way to do that, to get back into it, and, you know, I want to be able to improve myself as a player, and I want to... You know, make all the information available in case anyone else wants help doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the key of what we're trying to do, right? Is chronicle our diving into competitive Magic again, I guess. From my point of view, you know, I've never really played constructed tournaments so far professionally or competitively until recently with you, I think, have been the only two I've gone to.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's been sealed. I've been playing sealed for the past 2 years.
That's true.
But, you know, it's fun, but you know, it's kind of nice to have a consistent deck every once in a while.
Yeah. No, that's definitely the appeal. I see it as well. I played a lot of grass with you, and I swear you always, like, win when I play with you.
Maybe I just get lucky, Adam. It's not skill, I'll tell you that much. I don't know what I'm doing. But, yeah, so I guess the point is to go along with us for the ride, see what we think every week, how wrong we are, how right we are. See us stumble with us.
Yeah, exactly.
As we dive head first.
I think you put it perfectly. Okay, on to the next segment. I'm going to ask, why are we, and why should our listeners be interested in playing competitive Magic? What do you think, Ben?
Well, as someone who likes the game, I'm always looking for more of a challenge, personally, and kind of like anything that I get into, I guess. Competitive Magic is just a way to step my game up to the next level, and see how well I can fare against other people and to expand my knowledge of the game, I guess, and get better at it. Just recently, I'd say, even starting to go to competitive tournaments, constructed tournaments, I've already learned more than I think I did before with just kitchen table Magic or arch Magic. Just thought processes and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely, like, extremely mentally stimulating and, like...
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely. I mean, it's one of those things, if you enjoy doing it enough, I guess you just get to the point where you want to keep doing it. And it's definitely a way to fuel that.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, the competitiveness combined with, like, the mental stimulation is, like, my favorite part. About it. And on top of that, like, it's a game, so it's fun, you know?
It's true. It's fun.
And there are prizes, and that's sweet too.
There are prizes, and you enjoy yourself while playing. It's great. Even when you get a bad beat, you know? Sometimes you don't get to play a game and you draw 20 lands. It happens.
That's true. Yeah.
Still okay.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, like kind of like when you get in like that set where you're like you're playing a game, like weekly event every week or something, like it becomes like, I don't know, like it's real stimulating in the moment, but it's also like real relaxing as well to like have that kind of, you know, break from your life that you know is going to happen every week, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you go and you play a game.
Yeah.
And you love to play.
Exactly. So, I guess the question is now a good time to get into it? You know, and if so, why?
So, yes and no. Personally, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, there's always pros.
I think, yeah, so I think with cons, value-wise, it's kind of good to get in because you can get some staples with, like, fetches and stuff, which is nice.
Yeah.
So I think you kind of...
But at least they're out in the wild.
Yeah, they're still out in the wild. I mean, I guess you kind of starting when cons came out would have been better. I think from that side, I think also because of that, a lot of the other cards are cheaper that would typically be more expensive. The distribution would be more spread out against cards.
Hmm.
Whereas like cards like fetches are taking a lot of the value away from other cards that are played in cons. And like Jace is taking like a lot of the value away from other origins cards. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it's bad from, well, as we've talked about before, one, because it just rotated, two, because it's looking like every deck's going to be five colors.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is good for the meta.
Right, right.
Or the game in general, I guess.
Right. But that being said, you know, if you can find a competitive list that's not playing as many colors, you can kind of get into that pretty cheap because a lot of the actual cards... Like, and, you know, not the lands are really cheap right now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. If you look at, like, even, like, a Tark or Red, if you were to take out, like, the fetches, seeing as it's, what, like, 16 fetches in that deck or something?
Yeah.
It's like, 12, but still. If you take those out, your price drops substantially.
Yeah, I mean, it's a power commons, you know?
Yeah, it really is.
And Hangar Backwalker.
Hangar and Abbott. Well, Hanger's in the side, but...
True.
But Abbott, I guess Abbott's like 7, but even that, the rest of it's not that expensive. Though I guess a Tarker's just spiked, but...
Yeah. We'll see if that sticks.
It won't.
Yeah. I don't know, I don't think it's going back to where it was, but I don't think 20 is a reasonable price for that to stay at.
Was it in any of the other, like, top decks, big showers, or was it only in the Tarker Red?
I believe that was the only one it was in. So, like, I don't think a card holds, like, a price, like, just being in one deck, you know? Like, that's
yeah, exactly.
Like, demand. It's things that go into multiple archetypes. You know, granted, it does see play in Modern, but... I don't know, like an imprint card, seeing play in Modern, you shouldn't set the price that much.
I agree.
Yeah. I guess, I think you pretty much said everything I was going to say. One other thing that I think is pretty cool right now is that, that leagues are coming back on Odo.
Oh, yes.
And so I know that's certainly not an incentive for everyone, but I think it's a pretty cool thing that you can sign up for the league and, you know, just play one match at a time. You know, like you could spread it out over a week. You could spread it out over 2 weeks. You know, like I don't personally, I mean, it'd be near impossible to find, just like a 5 hour block to sit down and play Moto. Like I would just, I just don't really have a desire to do that. But, you know, if I can just find like 40 minutes, to get a game in,
just pump one.
That's pretty worth it to me.
Yeah, I think those are great. I think it's a great thing for them to do, bringing those back. I'm also always kind of torn on Moto, but I go back to it every now and then, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly like it, but I don't know. I like that it provides experience.
I guess that's the thing, right? It provides experience, and if you're really craving the itch to play, it lets you play.
Right, it's something.
You can do when you have 45 minutes to play.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so moving on. What exactly is our plan moving forward for getting back into it?
Build a deck and just go face first. See what happens.
Agreed. Probably just gonna find, I don't know. I have a few things that I want. You know, I want something cheap.
Yeah.
Because, that's obviously a concern.
But it does help that with each other and, other people we know, we can always pool cards to get something together, or each of us to have like a full deck to run.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely makes it more financially achievable.
Right. I guess more what I meant is like something that's going to get you like positive EV. On events, I remember after the Pro Tour last year, some guys, showed up next week with the global, Abzan Control deck list from the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And, at the time, that was close to $1,000.
Yeah, which is absurd.
I was like, how do you ever expect to get any sort of return on that? These guys weren't like real competitive players. They're just like F&M grinders.
I think that's a
term, but
I know what you mean though. And I think that's a trap that a lot of players that are, I guess, on the cusp of competitiveness, they probably grind it out a lot and, aren't quite pros. They probably know their stuff, we'll say, fall into where they see the quote unquote best deck, top deck, or most expensive deck. And they want that deck. They'll just spend all their money to get that deck. And they don't really think about the way we're coming from it, where we want to compete, but we also want to do it in a way that's financially suitable and maintainable by getting estimated value, right?
Right. Because, as a competitive player, I don't think of it as, I just want to win no matter what. I think of it as, I want to gain value no matter what.
Yeah.
It's
the same reason going to F&M draft, right? People complain or whatnot about drafting value. But competitively, to me, in order to sustain the hobby and be able to play other formats, it makes sense for me that if I open a card that's equal to the value of the draft or more, or even a third of it, right? If I open a $5 rare, I'm going to take the $5 rare because it's right. guaranteed value back on my return.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because that's, you know, that's how you grind out value. And that's, you know, that's the game plan, basically. You know, I think you're right. I think that's something that sometimes people fail to grasp when they're kind of getting into it. You know, they say, like, you know, I might play, like, a small event every week, but are you actually getting, you know, a return on that investment? Like, you're actually getting the value that you think you're going to get out of that? You know, probably not.
If
you're grinding PTQs, you know, and IQs and stuff, and doing well, then, like, absolutely, yeah, you know, you I'm certain you are. But if, like, that's not the level you're on, then maybe you shouldn't, you know, be spending that kind of money.
Yeah, I mean, if you spend...
I mean, that's obviously not a concern to everyone, you know, so...
Yeah, true. But, some people don't care. Some people... don't have to worry about that part. But from our standpoint, if you spend $1,000 on the top deck and then bring it every week to F&M and go to PPTQs and whatnot and never pose a winning record, right, that's just a poor value.
Yeah, that's just dumb to me. You know,
makes no sense.
Yeah, especially, you know, when, you know, Ryan Smart and, you know, win an SG Open with a pile of commons and Angerback Blizzard.
Exactly.
No. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, not all the time, but there's often going to be those, you're often going to be able to find, decks that are pretty budget friendly. You know, sometimes they might not be, you know, exactly tier one, but a lot of times they might attack the meta in a different way than people are expecting. Like, I don't know, I think like a year and a half ago, there was a 5K, there was like a TCG 5K or something around here that I got like 16th at with a pile of, white one drop.
Oh yeah, like blue white heroic or white heroic or whatever.
Yeah, it was just mono white.
Oh, okay.
It was literally just a pile of one drops. So it was like, it's
40 one drops in land.
I think it was 25 one drops and 4 two drops and then like the elements and stuff.
Nice.
But I don't know, it got under green red devotion and it was too much for mono black devotions 1-for-1 spot removal to be able to get the check.
Gotcha.
You know. So it just kinda got there. Plus I had some sweets and tech, so
Cyborg Tech.
Immortal Servitude for 1.
Nice. 6 Cyborg Tech can win you the match. They don't see it coming.
That's true. I mean, I can't tell you how many games, you know, game 1, eked out a win against Blue White Control. Game 2, you know, they Supreme Verdict me. And then I just followed up with Immortal Servitude. And they're just like, okay. <Good win.
laughs> Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, not that, you know, I don't want to sell anyone on that deck far, because it was not a great deck, but it did some work for a month.
But the point is that you can make a budget deck that can do good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for a while there, a couple FNMs I went to in Boston when I was down there, I was running that zombie deck, that Necromancer Stockpile.
Oh, yeah.
With Risen Executioner and stuff. A real budget brew deck. Discard zombie to get a zombie, you know. And I took down a couple FNMs with it, just straight up. Control couldn't keep up with it. Nothing could keep up with it. It's great.
Hmm.
I think the deck cost me $20, like max.
Yeah, I feel like that's a plus when, I don't know, when there's a lot of like fine-tuned control running around. A lot of times it's hard for them to deal with things outside the current meta.
You know? Oh yeah.
I remember back when I was playing Blue Eye Control in Theros Mika, I hated bringing it to FNM because you could just face like a pile of cards that you like don't have an answer to.
Yeah, if you just get the unlucky draw.
Yeah.
Hook up the homebrew and you're just done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's one game someone had like, it was this real janky like four card like infinite mana combo or something. Something like that. And they had it on the table. I could have stuffed it if I had realized, but it just looked like a pile of cards to me. So I was like, whatever. Like I could have supreme verdicted, but I just didn't.
Because you didn't know what's going on.
It was just like, yeah. And so then I just died.
That's rough.
But that's my favorite. They made it like infinite mana and Sphinx's Ribbed for like 30 or something. And then, and then I don't know, stuff happened and I died. But yeah.
It's pretty easy to win when you can play your entire
team. Yeah. Sphinx's Ribbed into, so on my end stuff, the Sphinx is red for like 30 something, and found, that green Hydra that had haste and pro blue.
Yeah, Scourge. Is it the Scourge one? Scourge Veil? Is that the one?
I don't remember. It's from, I think it was
from Theros. Right? Yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, but whatever. Then he just played that on his turn and killed me. That was good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, I just heard that one for not reading cards. Yeah.
That'll get you every time, not reading cards.
That's true. It's a good one. Yeah.
Lesson one.
I just learned today, actually, that Hidden Dragon Slayer does not have, like, the same text as
Dragon Hunter? Whatever?
No, the Valor stance. So one destroys creatures with power or greater, and one destroys creatures with toughness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good distinction to know.
Yeah.
Huge difference there.
Yeah. Did not know until I tried to kill a Wingmate Rock and just couldn't.
You're like, why isn't this working?
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, so moving on. What type of decks are you looking to play moving forward here? Do you have anything specific in mind? It's okay if you don't.
I'm huge on the on-color shards right now, as you know. Although I would love a, like, teamer deck with Savage Knuckleblade, of course.
Yeah.
But I feel like the mana strongest for on-color shards.
Yeah, I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
It undeniably is.
I don't think it's being taken advantage of because everybody's trying to force 4 to 5 colors, which might be good because there's no punishment for it right now. If that changes, but you know, I'm huge on the Naya or Jund shard. I think there's a lot of strong cards in either. I think you can make it pretty viable.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. As for myself, I think we already said something, like cheap slash has like a good EV, like potential, you know, and like, I think, as someone who's like kind of coming back after not playing a lot, I really want to play something proactive.
Yeah, it's supposed to be reactive.
It's a reactive, because I think that it'll just help me make better decisions until I kind of get back in the swing of things, and then I might be more comfortable playing something more reactive. But I think for the meantime, I don't know, something that just makes moves and, you know, turns dudes sideways is where I want to be at.
I completely agree. Reactive, you really need to understand the meta and know what's going on. And you also have to make good meta calls for whatever tournament you're going to, because you can make a control deck and it can't be perfect for everything. So you can tune it for more, you know, Atarka red battles, and then just not run into a single Atarka red deck.
Right, right. Like, and you also have to know when Atarka red is just, you're just never going to win it. And to just, So yeah, I think Atarka red or some variation, possibly like a Naya thing, is looking pretty good to me right now.
But I think so. And honestly, you probably decide on whatever is the cheapest to build based up whatever we already have.
Yeah, to be totally honest with that. I agree.
Because we already have some pools to work with. I mean, if I have 90% of Atarka red, one of us will probably run Atarka red. If we have 90% of Bring to Light for some reason, one of us will run Bring to Light.
Yeah. I do actually have those. It's the one thing that I pre-ordered.
What, Bring to Light?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Because I saw it and I misread it. And I thought that you could grab Planeswalkers. And I was like, this is the most broken thing ever.
It's still pretty broken, right?
Yeah.
Because it's five, if you can get five mana, it's five mana searcher deck for almost anything that costs five mana or less to play.
Yeah.
It's like Court of Calling on crack.
Agreed.
It's...
But like full disclosure, I don't know if I would have done it if I had noticed that it was just creatures, instants, and sorceries. But I'm still pretty happy about it because I think they were around like $1 or $1.50 each.
Yeah, that's solid.
Yeah, feel good about that. Okay, moving on. I know we've kind of talked about this a bit, but do you have any other thoughts on just Battle for Zendikar in general or the events of this week?
So one big takeaway from SDG Open in Indianapolis is that a lot of the Battle for Zendikar cards, other than Gideon and Brain Delight, weren't really seen. Like at all in playlists, other than the lands, clearly. But
yeah, so, but it seemed like the better mana bases just opened it up to play all of the good wedge cards, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what it did. It was like, okay, now all your dragons and con stuff can be played together.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, there was literally like zero Eldrazi. Besides Ulamog, right? Was he like the only one who made day two?
I'm not sure actually, but
if there's any more, it wasn't much.
Yeah, I didn't go through the whole thing. Yeah.
So I think that's a big takeaway to notice. But I think a lot of the cards will be played. It's just a matter of finding their decks. I still think Void Winnower is insane. I think it's really powerful. I think if you bring it in a matchup, it could single-handedly win you the game on the spot after casting.
I mean, your opponent can't even afterwards.
Yeah, it's stupid good. I faced it in pre-release, and I know it's a little different.
Oh, okay.
But the only reason I beat it,
it's bonkers than that.
I beat it both times because I ran Bone Splinters. But that's not it. It's not going to be right.
That's funny. I mean, I don't know. It's a pretty sweet card. You know, it just, honestly, it reminds me of Iona a lot. Because it basically just says, like, your opponent can't play half their deck or something.
Exactly. I also think a card that might see some play, it didn't really see any play yet. I can't remember the name of it. It's a Devoid card, it's red. And it's like, exile target land, non-basic land. And all copies of it.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing, I think it could be good against certain multicolored decks. But the problem that I think is holding it back still is that these multicolored decks aren't running four of, like, the non-basic lands. Because you can't hit a fetch with it. But
right,
the five-colored decks are running, like, what, one Cinderglade, one Prairie Stream?
Right. So, like they might actually only have, you know, like, two or three lands that produce, like, one of their colors. But they're different lands, because they're like two different battle lands, you know? So it's like, you can exile one, but you can't just get them.
Exactly, which is what's holding it back.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Still a sweet card, though, I think.
I think it could be very powerful. Yeah. And we'll have to keep an eye on it throughout the BFC standard.
Yeah. I hope if things do continue to go this way, that there is some way to punish the mana bases in both of the gate
watch. Both of the gate watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
There's speculation that Chandra's gonna have a heavy role in Oath of the Gatewatch for some reason.
Okay.
So maybe she'll be like plus one destroy target land.
I don't
just completely break her.
I don't know if that's what I want. But I mean, you know, that'd be fine because I just play her, so that'd be fine.
Yeah, you just run her and you're fine.
Yeah. I think I'm okay with that. I don't see myself playing a deck that doesn't have red in it right now.
Me neither, honestly. I think red, I like a lot of the green cards that aren't seeing play, to be honest, but
yeah.
And I think a lot of the Rakdos cards are pretty strong. You know what I think would be good, actually, I've kind of been fooling around with, is like a Mardu aggressive deck, like a Mardu red deck, I guess, running one or two Helm Smashers.
I have no idea what that does.
Zergo Helm Smasher? He's 5 mana, red, white, black, 2 colorless. And he's a 7/2 haste that's indestructible on your turn. So I could totally see a Mardu deck pulling that out turn 5 and just ending the game.
That's interesting.
He doesn't see play right now. I think he could be a good sideboard. Or
did you say he's haste?
Yeah, he's 7/2 haste, okay. Indestructible during your turn.
Yeah.
If he kills a creature, he gets a +1/+1 counter for every creature he kills.
That's cool. I love anything with haste right now.
Yes.
I think haste is insane right now. I think it's so good.
It is, because most of the meta is slow, so.
Yeah.
If you can efficiently curve and be at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And a ton of the removal is sorcery speed anyways. So, like, they're not... Well, he has indestructible on your turn anyways, so that's added protection, like, the turn you cast him. But, It's pretty good to be able to just swing in, get some damage in before your opponent can do anything about it.
I think you could surprise some people with that.
Yeah. See that. Although, I don't know, if I'm playing 5 mana, I might rather just be playing Dragon Speaker. And...
Well, the way I see it is more like a 5 mana, 7 damage to your face.
Yeah.
Is where I see it coming into play. I see them, like, turn 4, or their turn 5, whatever, tapping out to kill all your creatures so they can stabilize with something. And then turn 5, you drop that. They don't have a way to respond.
Right.
You're essentially 5 mana, 7 damage.
Yeah.
Which, hopefully, if you're running a red deck wins type strategy, 7 damage should be enough to win.
Gotcha. No, I definitely see what you're saying. Yeah, I was just thinking it might be worth it to hedge a little bit with Carbon's utility and get a few points of damage in. But... there are definitely situations where you just want to maximize damage output as well.
So maybe it's sideboard, or one of them sideboard, or both of them sideboard.
Either way, I don't hate swinging for 7 damage, so.
Yeah, me neither. Not a turn 5, 7 damage.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Good stuff. I believe that's it for the cast this week.
All right, everyone, we are the Cabal Therapy Podcast, and this is the end of your session. If you'd like to reach me, Alan, I'm at the Allendorf, and Ben is at Benjamin H. Hubert. If you'd like to get in touch with the cast, you can reach us at cabaltherapists@gmail.com. Thanks, and see you guys next week.
Later. Gators.
God.